everybody, and welcome to this, let's be honest, occasional episode of Grim Scenarios podcast hosted by Emma and Milk. I'm your host, Emma, and with me is Milk, who's, of course, also here for good or ill.
I am here for good or ill.
Anyway, we just have a very few more episodes in our tier list project before we get back to our normal bullshit. and our current thing is we have two minions that were released well after we finished just looking at minions, and we never got around to swinging back to them. So we're going to swing back to those now, and then we're going to look at the entire tier list holistically, see what we think might need to be changed, see what we think is correct, make sure like the tiers are relatively sensible, see where our thoughts might have changed in the intervening months, some of the characters we ranked when they were quite new, some of the characters we ranked when they were quite old.
I think we also, in some ways, changed our ranking criteria a little bit as we went along. I think earlier on, we were maybe a little more thinking about the... I think we were thinking a little bit more about, like, the fun of the characters to an extent. And, like, as we went on, we really kind of graduated more into, like, talking about them very... very strategic, kind of focused. I think in the first batch, especially the minions, we might have erred on the side of not strategy. So we should at least think about those again.
Yeah, I just distinctly remember that coming up when we were talking about the politician, where we docked it down a tier because it's so miserable to so many people that sort of caps its strategy a little bit, was our theory. Some of your strategy options are turned off by the fact that it'll make the game unfun for other people. And, there's variations of a quote that goes around sometimes. I'm sure I've said it before in public space facing places. Like, when you're playing Blood on the Clock Tower, trying to win is important, but winning isn't important. I really like that thought.
Like, it's a really clean thought about Clock Tower. Like, you should be trying to win, but actually winning isn't the important part of the game.
So, like, there's things you can do, like, in a Clock Tower game that may increase your chances of winning, but, like, will make the game not fun. And, like, some characters lean into those strategic options. And what we think about those strategic options, because I think in a healthy circle, those strategic options are a little bit foreclosed by the fact that, you know, people may not want to ever play with you again if you do them. But
that's a downside.
There's two minions we have to rank. They are the Zaun and the Wizard. There are three other new characters that are coming out in the carousel, at least, that the powerful sleuths over at the unofficial speculation spoilers section have identified, but those aren't fully released yet. Those aren't actually released yet, so we can't talk about them. Zaun and Wizard.
Yeah, so two I guess very interesting characters.
We'll do them in release order, which was Zaun first, then Wizard.
I think that's a good point.
Yeah, Zaun filled in the very important role of making sure there was a Clock Tower character out there that started with the letter X. it also filled in the very important role of providing outsider modification from the minions that wasn't Baron or Godfather, which means that Baron and Godfather don't need to be forced on quite as many scripts where it's like, what really is Baron and Godfather doing here, except for the scriptwriter was afraid of the Sentinel. Milk, what are your sort of thoughts on Zaun strategy?
Do you want to do the text? Just since we...
Yeah, we can do the text. Oh my god.
I mean, I have thoughts on the strategy. I can just go into it.
Yeah, no, I can talk about the text. All right. The text of the Zaun is, on night X, all townsfolk are poisoned until dusk, period, square brackets, X outsiders. The way this works is the... setup effect of X outsiders means the storyteller can arbitrarily choose any number of outsiders to be in play, and then however many outsiders at the start of the game that is, and however many outsiders are in play at the start of the game, that is the night the Zaun poisons all townsfolk.
Yeah. And crucially, it doesn't change if the outsider count changes, right? It's always, it's a setup condition, so it's the number that are in play at the beginning of the game, which is important, I think, as well.
And, you know, this is another one of those characters, because this is a pet peeve of mine, where people will talk about rules as written, as if it was just, lines that show up on the character token. But when you look at the Zaun rules as written, like, this literally is not functional as to explain to you what this ability does or how it plays, unless you actually look at the Almanac text and the How to Run and explains what the X means and that the storyteller can do whatever they want with outsider count. Rules as written, friends, is the Almanac, not the ability text. If you want to make an argument about what the rules are as written, you need to go read the Almanac, because the Almanac tells you what the rules are as written. The ability text is a summary that's meant to capture it, but perhaps imprecisely, as in the case of the Zaun. That's just a pet peeve of mine that I've wanted to get off my chest.
I mean, the ability text is an arbitrary length, right? Like, so obviously it's not going to capture the, like, it's the arbitrary length of what fits on a token, basically. So obviously that's not going to capture the complexity of characters in a game that has such a wide variety of things like Blood on the Clock Tower. So of course you should go and read the Almanac.
Especially if you want to argue what the rules are as written for a character. But anyway, back to the Zaun's strategy, Milk. What do you think about the Zaun's strategy?
So I think just taking Zaun as outsider modification to just kind of start with, there's something I've been puzzling over, and I don't know what the right answer is, but I've been puzzling over whether open-ended, I'll call it, outsider modification, where it's sort of the Khazali, Lord of Typhon, Zaun thing, where it could be any number, is more powerful on one side and more strategic on the other side than static outsider manipulation. The plus one, minus one from Godfather, the plus two from Baron. And I've been thinking about, is the strategy is different about when you're dealing with outsiders in both of those spaces, but is the strategy more or less complex when you have to deal with the Baron's world, where it's, okay, there's definitely four outsiders in play. If Baron's on script and in play, it's definitely four outsiders, but also, like, if it's not on script, maybe you can fake it being in play, you know, especially if you have other quiet outsiders with it. So there's, like, this kind of interesting complexity of using a, almost like faking a Baron being in play as a very interesting way for evil to play, as compared to Zaun, where you can't really fake Zaun being in play specifically, but you can sort of create this sense of possibility around it. Like, oh, maybe this night things were wrong. And you kind of try to create this sort of feeling of uncertainty about outsiders and outsider count. That eventually good probably solves out because they can kind of align information and you know, the claim outsider claims and things like that. So strategically, I'm trying to think about, like, the Zaun doesn't, the player isn't, you know, doing anything active with the ability. The ability's passive. So I'm thinking about what kind of worlds they can build and what they kind of have to do with that ability to make it more functional, make it more useful. What do they have to work around? In a lot of the Zaun games that I've seen actually played, the town often figures out quite readily that the Zaun is in play. And I'm considering whether that's something that the Zaun should be either leaning into but trying to disrupt by, like, trying to change the outsider count and try to make people think that information is wrong on a different night than it is, or whether the Zaun should try to hide their existence entirely. And that's the kind of space that I'm thinking about in terms of strategy. I don't have an answer necessarily yet, but I'm thinking about it. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, in one sense, something we should think about, of course, is the Zaun in some ways is similar to the Baron, right? In that a big part of your ability is the setup is messing with the expected outsider count. But unlike Baron, that's in a not fully solvable way, right? And I think that that's... It, but there's the two big differences from Baron is, one, it's not fully solvable for the good team. Two, the Zaun has to... is even more committed to staying alive because, like, the Zaun wants to make sure its poisoning actually triggers, generally speaking. In some sense, like, the threat of the poison is just as real as the poison. And if you die night one and people solve it's a Zaun game, that's going to trigger on night. If you get executed day one and people solve that it's a Zaun game, that's going to cause poisoning night three. Like, they still might assume all their night three info is wrong.
I think one of the hard things I've noticed with Zaun is if you do have some sort of confirmatory role, roles that have mechanical effects, they can prove that certain knights are not Zaun knights. Something like a farmer or a knight watchman can prove that a specific knight is not a Zaun knight, and that seems like a real challenge for the Zaun to work around, since you don't, you know, you might want to fake that knight two is a Zaun knight, but then you can't because something mechanical happened. For example.
Mm.
Which leads me to being, again, still a little bit uncertain about how Zaun and Baron compare to one another. We put Baron in S tier, and I think for good reason. But I'm trying to think about whether Zaun, which I think is objectively more powerful in sort of in the abstract than Baron, but whether there's whether there's more strategy that goes into it, I'm not sure, or as much.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons Baron is up in S tier, of course, is because we evaluated base three characters in the context of their home script,
right?
Where Baron has a lot of strategic depth just because of its sort of status as secretly the very best minion to catch a star pass, right? If you could abstractly prefer which minion ability would I want to turn into a demon, you're going to pick the Baron because the other three are still doing something and the Baron isn't. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's very, like, and, like, Baron's knowledge that it needs to play around the ability to catch a star pass adds a lot to its strategy. But it's harder to, like, say that about Zaun, because, one, we don't know if Zaun will have a base script. Two, we know that if Zaun does have a base script, it ain't gonna have an imp on it.
For sure.
So, like, baseline Zaun strategy of having to play around sort of being the fallback option and consider the options of being the fallback option aren't there. Plus, unlike the Baron, the Zaun doesn't have its job completely done at the start of the game. So, like, the Zaun may not have that same status as the default ideal star pass option, even if you do think of it in context of the star pass, because, you know, you might want to get that night three poisoning off. You might want the star pass to go to the spire poisoner instead, because they're going to do something less powerful than poison every time it's focused on night three.
Right. I think it also commits evil to a line of play, for better or worse, that it kind of involves them having to find a way to disrupt the real outsider count, or to try to, at least for some portion of the game, hide the real outsider count. Because, yeah, quite frankly, if Good figures out on day three that the night two was the Zaun night and all their information was disrupted on night two, then all that disrupted information, it's much less useful if Good knows their information was disrupted, right? You want Good to have disrupted information that they don't know about so that they chase it. You don't want them to have disrupted information that they know about that they then sort of, okay, they discard this day of information. You want them to ideally either get bad information that they don't know is bad and chase that bad information, or discard a night of information that's not the night that they should be discarding. And that involves playing around with outsider count. And so I think, from my perspective, I think at least some aspect of Zaun involves evil being a little bit more limited in their strategic options, just because they are incentivized to play with that outsider count to some extent. It enables it too, which is something that not everything does. So it's like a cost benefit, but I think it's a slightly greater cost for the Zaun than it is a benefit in some ways, because it they do kind of have to try to figure out the Outsider Count so that they know when they're poisoning the town. They have to kind of try to disrupt that then. Because, like, if you're leaning into a Zaun 2 world and you're like, oh, it is actually a Zaun 2 world, that's not great for me. I think there's some trickiness there in how you have to play it. And then, of course, it doesn't have an active choosing component. Like some of the other minions that we've put in A and S tier, though.
Yeah. My gut feeling is that... My gut feeling is Zaun is a little less strategic than Baron. In part because, like... You know, Baron has sort of the clear mission drives of... Okay. This needs to be a game where we frame outsiders. This needs to be a game where we don't let the confirmation power of extra outsiders overwhelm the loss of townsfolk. Where Zaun doesn't really have that direction, right? Zaun is just sort of, hey, like, the most common Zaun number is probably going to be not even changing the outsider count, right? Like, yeah. Because the outsider count is the way it is for a reason. It's particularly balanced. Like, a Knight 1 Zaun can be really strong, but at the cost of having extra townsfolk, a Knight 3 Zaun, like, a lot of those extra townsfolk you were hoping to poison will be dead already. It's generally too late for by Knight 3 or Knight 4. Like, Knight 2 is really generally the sweet spot for a Zaun anyway, so...
Yep. And I think... something I've discovered about Zaun trying to build scripts with it is that it has there is an inherent trade-off in the Zaun's ability, but that trade-off isn't something that the Zaun player really gets to interact with. It's something that the storyteller gets to interact with, which is that more than likely the Zaun's poisoning power is inversely proportional to its removing townsfolk power. Right. So the more townsfolk that you remove to add outsiders with using the Zaun, the less powerful that poisoning probably is. Because adding four outsiders is really powerful, but poisoning the whole town on day four probably isn't as powerful as poisoning the whole town on day one or two. You know? So
yeah.
So I think there's something there as well to think about. I do agree with you. I think the most likely numbers are gonna be one and two. Maybe occasionally three, but a Knight 3 poisoning is almost just objectively worse than a Knight 2 poisoning most of the time. So your trade-off is then in the additional outsider that you're adding.
So I think for me, talking through this, I'm willing to put Zaun down in B tier, well below Baron. Despite their superficial similarity.
I was toying back and forth between A and B tier, but I do think that the limitation of really having to sort of not know the outsider count but have to interact with it is much trickier for Zaun than it is for Baron, where you know the outsider count and have to interact with it, and it's a much more interesting puzzle for Baron to sort of create that, whereas Zaun sort of, you're a little bit just sort of limited by your lack of knowing what's going on. One thing I will say that I've discovered recently in looking at Zaun is that I do think Zaun is maybe the one character that I've found that balances Bounty Hunter very, very well. I've noticed it. I've noticed it recently on a lot of Bounty Hunter scripts. I put it on a Bounty Hunter script that I was working on. And it's interesting how that one-shot poison can disrupt a first, your first Bounty Hunter ping that makes Bounty Hunter unfun, or maybe it just gets the second one.
This isn't does it interact with Bounty Hunter well podcast.
Yeah. The only reason I say that, though, is that, it as a minion, it fills some niches, I think, that are useful to fill broadly from a strategy of, whole evil teams, not so much as, the Zaun itself. It, fills in a very important space strategically for whole teams. I don't think it's that strategic on its own, is kind of what I was trying to get at. So I think I agree with you, and I think it goes in B tier.
All right. Yay. All right, next up. The biggest, baddest of them all. The minion that can literally break the game. It's the wizard. Once per game, choose to make a wish. If granted, it might have a price and leave a clue as to its nature. This is open-ended player agency to the extreme.
It's very hard to see how we don't put this in S tier, but at least we should talk about it.
Much like how we talked about how the artist is sort of... The artist and philosopher are in S tier because of their extreme flexibility for townsfolk. They can choose to duplicate almost any other townsfolk role. They can... Like... In the philosopher's case, obviously, on script. In the artist's case, it can go... It can duplicate off script roles even. Like...
Open-ended power. We've ranked open-ended power very highly in this tier list.
Like, the wizard is just, like, it can do literally whatever it wants. It can be a summoner. Well, it can't really be a summoner. But it can be a goblin or a poisoner or a scarlet woman or an assassin or a devil's advocate or marionette. Oh, marionette's a little trickier. It can do most anything any other minion ability can do, and it has all those choices. But it can also just break the game in completely new and creative ways. I've seen a lot of successful wizard games where the wizard wishes for something that's just exists as a almost pure distraction. I've seen wizard games where they do real complicated mechanical stuff, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. I've seen wizard games where the wizard hasn't really thought through the consequences of their own actions when they make their wish. I've seen wizard games, like, every wizard game is so different and so unique because wizards can do whatever they want.
I had a great
a whole, like, hour and a half YouTube podcast with Ed where we talked about all the different things wizards can do.
I had a really great simple wizard wish from a player right after the wizard came out, where they just wished that the other minion, not themselves, but the other minion, which is kind of funny, registered as the demon. They just wished that the other minion registered as the demon. Like, that was it. And it's like a simple, very subtle wish, but like, imagine if the like faux pas could like go on a minion and it registers it as the demon instead of a minion. Like, it's quite strong, you know? They also still registered as the demon, you know, which was the cost of the wish, I think is reasonable. Or as a minion, rather. But, you know. So, I mean, like, wizards can do things of a very wide range of power levels. And, you know, in that hour and a half, I think, almost, podcast episode, you know, we talked through a lot of those possibilities.
Yeah. I mean, I had a wizard game once where I drew the wizard token, and essentially the entirety of my wish was to be publicly announced as the wizard.
I was storytelling that.
Yeah, Milk was storytelling that. And, like, after that, I just, like, did shenanigans all game. And it just took so much of Talon's processing power to try to think about what this wish could possibly be besides just being publicly announced as the wizard, that it sort of very much distracted them from the more important task of finding and killing my demon, which they failed to do. Like,
yeah. Like, I've talked about it here and in other public spaces before. You know, there's a lot of ways for evil teams to attack the good team in Blood on the Clock Tower. And one that I quite like, and the simple way of doing this, of course, is like you create worlds that go counter to the good team's world, or you like, you know, disrupt with chaotic play or whatever, you know, is using up good's processing power and using up good's time to solve the game. And if you, with the wizard wish, and we talked about this in the wizard episode, if you use up their processing power on what the hell is the wizard doing, you use the processing power up on, well, you know, what is the wish, then you're not using it, then they're not using that time and energy to try to figure out who the demon is, as Emma pointed out. And so, you know, it's a completely different angle of attack for the evil team to bring against the good team. And I think that alone puts this minion into S tier with very little argument.
Yeah.
It does break our lovely, we have 13 tokens in S tier, of course.
Probably. Well, we had 14, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think we have an extra.
We had one extra townsfolk, so yeah, now we have one extra minion. But hey, maybe we'll readjust some stuff as we're going through here. Now, in the second half of this episode, which is our, let's look at this holistically and see what changes we need to make. One change we need to make is, you know, the mourning period is over. We've gone past bargaining, denial, etc. TPI killed the organ grinder.
Yeah.
It used to be a really interesting A-tier minion. You know, people are gonna... I already know. I'm like, we're gonna get people in the comments being like, oh, but the organ grinder can do, like, be drunk for a while, and then surprise, organ grinder, and it's so interesting. And it's not. I understand you think it's fun. It's not. Like, I don't, like... the organ grinder should just have their ability on every night. And now you just have to play, like, a normal minion because you can be executed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to move this all the way down to D tier. I think there's absolutely nothing interesting about this character strategically anymore.
I was trying to think about, like, is there some strategic value to hiding it, to having it turned off?
And, no, like, some people think so.
The strategy that people usually say is, oh, you can frame someone else as having been the organ grinder. Well, that's great, but you're not framing them as being the demon. You're framing them as being the dead organ grinder, which I don't know how useful that is. Maybe it's useful. Maybe it gets you into final three as, like, a living player. But also, you may at some point want to turn the ability back on, because it's so incredibly powerful that turning it off seems like madness when you could use that disruptive force on the good team. And so I think I was trying to find reasons why you might turn it off. I was trying to think of reasons why you might turn it off and that might be useful, and I just can't find any. If I could have found a single reason that I thought was compelling for you to turn off the organ grinder ability for some period of time, maybe if you think you can, like, get into final three and, like, TPK because you've gotten the organ grinder into final three very sneakily, maybe. But I just, if I could have found one compelling argument that I really thought was good, I would have said maybe we put it in C tier. I can't. I'm with Emma. Unfortunately, dead monkey.
Yeah. They killed it.
He's dead, Jim. One that I wanted us to take another thought at and just take another pass at, because I don't want it to feel like we're copping out on it. We did dump Alchemist down at its own not applicable tier, and part of the reason why is just it's very difficult to, like, go through all the possible permutations of Alchemist with other minion abilities. You know, the Alchemist having most minion abilities is going to be, like, that minion but a tier higher because it's a townsfolk, and minion abilities tend to be higher than townsfolk. Right, broadly speaking, like, that's just kind of the way of thinking of it. I don't particularly want to move Alchemist out of not applicable tier, because I think if you just look at the tier of the minion ability that's associated with it, most of the time it's just going to align with that or maybe be slightly stronger. But I thought it's worth at least bringing up again, since we did call it out separately from everything, and see where if your thoughts on it had changed at all.
My thoughts haven't really changed.
Okay, great. Well, we'll just leave it there, like, then.
I don't know. Like, I just, like, don't... Like, the strategic depth for a Alchemist Zahn is so different from the strategic depth for an Alchemist Scarlet Woman, especially with it not having the knowledge of this minion's out of play anymore, which is so different from what you have to think about when you're an Alchemist Devil's Advocate versus what you have to think about when you're an Alchemist God Help Me Summoner versus what you need to think about when you're an Alchemist Pit Hag versus what you need to think about when you're an Alchemist Wizard. All these things are just so different. Like, it's just, I don't know how to place it anywhere. Like, each one of those, I could have a different discussion about. Like, Alchemist Organ Grinder is very low strategy, because unlike the normal Organ Grinder, which should leave it always on, the Alchemist Organ Grinder should leave it always off, because this is a benefit that is extremely powerful for specifically the evil team. Whereas, like, an Alchemist Harpy has a lot to think about when they make their choices, right? Like, if you can force two evil players to be, an evil player to be mad and another evil player is an Alchemist Harpy, you've really put evil in a bind there.
It's almost like an innkeeper trying to find evils and, like, point like, them at each other. Or, like, pick them both, you know?
And if an evil player is not complying with an Alchemist Harpy madness, I will kill them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, like the things you have to think about when you're an Alchemist Harpy versus what you need to think about when you're an Alchemist Organ Grinder, what you need to think about when you're an Alchemist Fearmonger, are all just, it's just, they're just so different. I don't think we copped out. I think we took an honest look at the Alchemist. Like, we could do a whole different podcast that was just placing Alchemist, each Alchemist minion in its own strategy zone. Like, I don't know.
Let me ask you this.
The Alchemist has no inherent strategic value because it has no inherent ability.
Because its strategic value comes from the thing it's associated with.
Yeah, the old Alchemist at least had the inherent strategic knowledge that you've learned an out-of-play minion.
Right, which is quite strong. Which is quite strong even if the minion ability that you've gained isn't particularly beneficial, right?
Yeah, like that was at least a consistent strategy avenue we could talk about for the Alchemist.
Yeah.
But the Alchemist just no longer has a native ability.
It's just,
so
it's,
I think
just
it's,
that minion.
It's in the right spot.
And it's a worse version of that minion, basically. Because it can, because the storyteller can also just tell you no now.
Yeah.
I just wanted to call that out because we did have that one like separated out, and I wanted to like make sure we had really clarified what that was.
There's a few others I think I wanted to talk about, so why don't I propose one to talk about and then you propose one and we'll do that till we're finished.
That sounds good.
First off, I'm so sad that, like, S tier isn't perfectly pretty, so I'm trying to figure out. Alright, let's look at our now five S tier minions. Summoner, Goblin, Baron, Poisoner, Wizard. Milk, are there any of those you think that we could move down to A tier?
I do, and it hurts me greatly to think about this. But I wonder if, because of what you said earlier when we were talking about Saan, about having looked at Baron just on Trouble Brewing, I wonder if the strategic nature of Baron is highly associated with the fact that Trouble Brewing has Drunk. And I wonder if Baron and Drunk are almost intrinsically linked in that way. That makes Baron, when you take it outside of Trouble Brewing, on Trouble Brewing it's 100% an S tier minion. I think you can craft scripts where Baron is absolutely an S-tier minion.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if taking it off of Trouble Brewing and looking at it more holistically, if the fact that it's now a known quantity makes it too solvable and makes it limits what the Baron can do. Take it away from Imp, where it can't catch a star pass. Take it away from Virgin, where it can't trigger a Virgin and sort of be like, I don't know what happened. You know,
taking it out of that environment. More than, like, Drunk or a Virgin, I think, like, the things that really make the Baron less strategically interesting to me when you remove them are Undertaker, Imp, and Ravenkeeper. Like,
sure.
Because it's so specifically bad for a Baron to be found out, because it suddenly, it confirms four outsiders, right? Yep. Like, if you remove these characters that can specifically identify a Baron, like Undertaker, like Ravenkeeper, and if you remove the Baron's incentive to set itself up for star passes, the Baron's strategy, I agree, does considerably drop.
Yeah. Almost, I mean, I would almost move it down to B tier. Like, it hurts me, again, my favorite character, but it hurts me to say it, but I do think, like, genuinely, I think it moves quite a ways down.
I do think most scripts will have some sort of character detection that the Baron wants to avoid. If you, like, think of, like, well, what if Baron was on SNV? Well, that would be bad. Don't just stick a Baron on SNV. But then you'd have, like, Dreamers that Barons wanted to avoid. If you said, well, what about a Baron on BMR? Which, again, that wouldn't make much sense, but then you have like gamblers that barons want to avoid, or gossips. So I think some level of that character detection will almost always be present, but I think losing its association with imp does make the baron strategy a little more one-sided. So I would be comfortable moving it down to A, because I think like thinking about base characters in context of their home scripts is good. I wouldn't want to move it lower than A, because I think like Baron, when you see the interactions Baron has with stuff like Imp, with stuff like Ravenkeeper, with stuff like Undertaker, with stuff like Drunk, and to a lesser degree, Investigator, and Recluse. Like, these interactions all shine out the Baron's strategy. But I agree, sort of, in the abstract, maybe it's a little bit less strategic than Summoner, Goblin, right. Poisoner, Wizard.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And I've moved it down to A tier, next to Scarlet Woman, where it's very happy there. You know, it's very happy there in a holistic view. We got beat up pretty bad about putting Fortune Teller in B tier, Emma.
So, okay.
By friends of ours. Friends of ours beat us up quite badly about
Fortune Teller. Do you want to make the case for moving Fortune Teller somewhere else? Because I'll be honest, I don't. I think it's in where it belongs. But if you want to make the case for it, I'll certainly listen to it, and maybe you can convince me.
Something I've seen from people that are playing Fortune Teller a lot more recently is using Fortune Teller in a way as a crappy librarian to try to hunt down recluses on TB specifically. I think Fortune Teller does at least have an interesting strategy, and maybe we didn't give enough credit to the strategy of trying to work out what of your pings are good and real, what of your pings are red herringed, what of your pings are hitting a recluse. That's purely on TB. I think when you bring Fortune Teller off of TB, when you bring it away from recluse and poisoner, it makes it substantially stronger. And so I think people might be, with Fortune Teller, conflating the strength of Fortune Teller to find demons with the strategy of actually going and finding the demon. I'm personally very content to leave it in B tier. However, I can understand the argument that with the Fortune Teller's need to differentiate between, you know, getting the two picks and having to differentiate which end of the pick is the actual ping, you know, sort of having to triangulate pings. I can understand the idea, at least, of why maybe it belongs a tier higher, because once you get into the strategy of, okay, the initial strategy of I'm going to pick two people might not be that deep. The strategy that follows of after you've picked someone and gotten a yes and trying to get a no after you've gotten a yes, or trying to get a yes after you've gotten a no and triangulate out, that might be more compelling than we gave it credit for.
Artemis, come here, baby.
So I'm quite content with it in B tier, but at least I wanted to reiterate and kind of at least talk about the argument that it does have some strategic work to do in decision making. I think fundamentally, because the town is being whittled down, because there's less players to pick in general, I don't, you know, you're sort of trying to get reads on people and just picking them, and I don't know how much greater I feel personally that strategy is, but I can see from an external perspective, and I'm sure when we have some people on to talk to us about this, we could beat up on Fortune Teller a little bit more. I'm content to leave it where it is, but it was one that was pretty highly contentious in the comments and that we got beat up on pretty bad in our discussion channel as well.
I didn't think it was so bad. I mean, like, the case, like, Fortune Teller, like, because the Fortune Teller doesn't get direct pings, like, it needs to solve out its information, which is reasonable, I suppose. But on the other hand, like, I don't know. It's just, like, at the end of the day, you mostly want to kill yeses unless you have, like, a very good reason not to. Like, one of your yeses is the virgin, or one of your yeses is washroom confirmed, or you have a really good social read on one of your yeses. Unless you just want to kill your yeses and leave your nose alone, right? Like,
I agree.
Sometimes if you think it's a Scarlet Woman game, you want to kill your nose so you can keep your yes secret so they don't slip away to a Scarlet Woman. But, I don't know.
I'm personally quite happy to leave it as it is. But again, I wanted to bring it up because it was quite hotly discussed, at least.
Okay. Oh, we do have 13 townsfolk. Oh, right. We already moved one of our townsfolk down.
Yeah, we already moved out of townsfolk from S tier.
Yeah.
I figured you'd be focused on S tier, so I'm going to try to look elsewhere.
All right. So, talking about things that we moved out of S tier at some point because we talked about this a little bit off the top. The politician. One of our thoughts with the reason why politician ended up in A tier, not S tier, was like, you know, the being a decent person who cares about the other players you're playing with limits the strategic space of politician like it does almost no other character. I think wizard is the closest combination to the politician in terms of, like, the things this character is incentivized to do can be so unfun for other players, sometimes it's not worth it. But you said at the top you thought we had thought too much about these sort of fun aspects at the start. So I guess I wanted your thoughts on whether politician should move up to S tier, and if so, which of butler, damsel, lunatic, mutant should move down to A tier, because I don't want to put five outsiders in S tier.
I certainly don't want to put five outsiders in S tier, but for me, from a thinking about the strategy of playing as the politician. First of all, it's very hard for me to distinguish how I would play as a politician from how I would play as a damsel, except that as a politician, I'm genuinely trying to do more damage. But broadly speaking, I really don't want the evil team. I really don't want the good team to find me. I want the evil team to find me. I don't want the good team to find me, assuming I'm trying to win, be able to win with either team, right? The politician wins with the good team by default, and so if the good team just happens to win, that's fine for me. You know, my job is to try to make sure I also win if the other team wins. And that's, from my perspective, going to involve obfuscating what I am and trying to do the kinds of things that damsels do, which is find another role to claim, find a space where I can, you know, hide what I am and try to create misinformation. For politicians, once you're known to be the politician, there's almost no reason to continue trying to disrupt the game for your team. Being hidden is genuinely going to be your best avenue to winning, to being able to win with the evil team. And so from a how I am playing it perspective, I'm not sure there's a huge distinction between how I would play, how I think strategically about damsel, how I would play as damsel and try to avoid being detected by the evil team, and how I would play as the politician and try to avoid being detected by the good team. And so for me, that's the argument, I think, that's most compelling, that politician does go in S tier. Because there's quite a lot of strategy in choosing what you're going to bluff as, choosing how you're going to disrupt the team. It's not necessarily fun for the good team to have this person involved, but I'm not sure it's necessarily fun for the good team to have the damsel involved either. You know, losing to a damsel pick is a, you know, pretty rough ending to a game sometimes. It can be funny, but a lot of the times, you know, it sort of has that same kind of feeling of kind of ending a little anticlimactically. So I find that I can't distinguish between politician and damsel all that much in terms of how the strategy kind of functions. I don't know, what do you
think? I guess, like, where I think there's differences is that the things the damsel are incentivized to do, hide, try to bluff good information, get themselves killed at opportune times, like, these are never going to be things where someone on the good team afterwards is going to be like, I can't believe you were doing that. Like, that wasn't fun. Right?
Sure.
Like, some players may not enjoy the damsel mechanic, But they're not going to be mad at damsels for engaging in it. Whereas I've seen lots of games where politicians have made choices which the token incentivized them to do. And afterwards, people were like, yo, man, what the fuck? That, like, wasn't cool. And that's sort of where I think the distinction between the two, at least in my mind, lies, is, like, when you're playing as the politician, you have to sort of keep that in mind, and that sort of caps what you can do. Because you don't want to get in a situation where you're what the politician token incentivized you to do made someone else feel bad.
And I mean, from the perspective that we come from, you know, of thinking about, you know, positive play patterns and, you know, strategic play as well. But while I think it's worth mentioning that we probably did put some extra burden on certain rules because they're considered unfun or because they're considered to be, or maybe just are, quite frankly, kind of roles that cause strife between people, not between players. I think even though for me the strategy of politician is probably S tier, I can see what you're saying where if you start to reach the edge of what your kind of social contract really allows, maybe those aren't plays that you can actually make, and if they're not plays you can actually make, then they probably don't count for the strategy of the character.
Yeah, that's my concern. I'm fine, I think, moving politician to S tier would probably replace, in my mind, my beloved butler, but, like, that is my hang-up, is how much is the politician space limited by, or capped by, this sort of part of its nature.
I think we should live by our morals in this case. And while I think politician has, if you're willing to do anything, an S-tier ranking, if you're not willing to hurt people, if you're not willing to make plays that could potentially hurt people, I think probably that's going to cap out some of the things that you can do with politician. And for good reason. And, I mean, this is just a silly tier list, ultimately. Like, obviously, this is the great work, the magnum opus of MMI Lives, but, you know, it's just a silly tier list. Maybe it's okay for us to say, politician has a lot of unfun things you can do with it, and that definitely limits it in our minds as having strategic space.
Yeah, okay.
My turn. Since you brought up politician, Emma, I'm going to bring up another one that I think, I don't know if we downgraded it or not based on sort of questions of it being as fun, but I'd like to ask whether you think Legion ended up in the right place as a demon.
We put Legion A-tier.
A-tier.
I think it more or less did. Like, I'm looking at what's in S tier and thinking about it compared to Legion. The one it would replace, right, is Vortox, right?
It would be, like, Vortox, yeah.
It'd be Vortox or Legion. I think it, like, can't compete with Pukka, Alhad, or Imp.
I absolutely agree. It doesn't compete with any of those three. Right, but comparatively, I think we kind of docked Legion a little bit because so many people don't want to interact with it, whether for good reason or not.
That's possible. I guess, like, where I see what I think in my head, let me just make up my case why Vortox earns its spot over Legion is, I think it is more damaging for a good team to be dissolved that it is Vortox for Vortox than it is for a good team to be dissolved that it is Legion for a Legion. Right? If that makes sense. Like,
I'm interested.
Like, ultimately, the way I most often see Legions win is not because the good team is fooled about whether it's a Legion game or not. It's because one of the designated Legions was able to make themselves look good. One of the Legions was able to make themselves look good. Maybe even was the person pushing that it was a Legion game. And cast enough doubt in one good player's mind about who the Legion was in the final three to get a good player, get one good vote on a good player. Whereas I think if Vortoxes get solved, it's very backbreaking for a Vortox. Once good knows to reverse their information, the Vortox's ability essentially has no impact, right?
Sure.
It only has impact on things that aren't binary. Which, notably, on its script, is really only the clockmaker, right?
Sure.
For all other SNV characters, the Vortox, if solved, essentially no longer has a demon ability. And suddenly, like, I see Vortoxes lose because this gets solved, much more than I see Legions lose because this gets solved. So that, I think, puts the Vortox at a higher premium of trying to figure out, okay, how do I think about my bluffing strategy? How do I think about my world-building strategy? How do I think about my killing strategy to best make sure that good will not figure out this is a Vortox game? And you don't always succeed, but I think, like, the Vortox as a demon both needs to be thinking about that more than a Legion does. I think Legion ultimately doesn't really care if good solves its Legion, as long as they can focus on getting one good player to believe that one Legion is not Legion, which is ultimately what all demons are doing, right? Whereas okay. Vortox really, 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 really wants to prevent good from solving Vortox. So I think between that and between the Vortox having to choose who they kill, for me, I think this is right. But if you want to switch them, I'm not going to complain.
I think the argument for Legion is really that it's a completely different type of strategy. That is to say that it's a distributed strategy where multiple players have to contribute to the strategic approach of the Legion, as opposed to sort of any of the other demons where it's a single player kind of working with those bluffs. And, you know, I agree with you. What Legion is doing fundamentally is very similar to what sort of all of the other demons are trying to do, is sort of hide who the demon is and, you know, bluff convincingly. But I think Legion has a higher burden on that, in that multiple players have to coordinate that strategy, and that's not something that really any other demons have to do. That the pitfalls could be fallen into sort of by anyone, and even then still, someone still has to come out with a coherent world. I'm happy to say that that keeps Legion in A tier, but I think it's worth calling out that it's quite close. Like, I think they're both highly strategic. It's just the differentiation of how that strategy is. The Vortox strategy is very much about desperately needing to hide the Vortox, that it's a Vortox game, because as soon as good solves it, the demon is in big trouble, and the information is all solved, very, very solvable. I think Legion, maybe it doesn't matter as much if it does get solved, but the distribution of strategy across multiple players makes it a much sort of more complex strategy, and sort of the coordination aspect, I think, is high. So I'm only making that argument because I do think it's worth making again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, where I see it is ultimately, like, Legion, I think in a lot of Legion games, as long as one Legion is not checked out and is in the zone and is the designated survivor, all the other Legions can sort of do whatever they want. Well, maybe you need two, because you might run, like, sometimes Legion will lose because the good team will be, like, on five players live, and they'll be like, okay, this player's definitely Legion. One of these four players is good. Let's kill one of the good players.
I don't get that. Could you try again?
Shut up, Siri.
By the way, okay.
That's David.
So you need two legions trying to look good. But the other, you know, three, two. Sorry, just doing some quick math in my head. Nine legions don't really have to engage with that. They can just sort of do whatever they want. They don't have to be part of the coordinated strategy. They just have to be aware enough not to vote on the legion that they're trying to bring to Final Three. But one of the marks of the legion that's going to make it to Final Three is they're probably not being nominated and voted on because good players aren't voting on them. So I think it's very easy for Legion to sort of end up, and I think this is one of the reasons Legion ends up not that fun, is, like, frequently, like, you feel like you end up in Legion games where it is, like, you know, in a 12-player 9-3 Legion game, here's six or seven checked-out Legions, and one or two who are doing all the heavy lifting and all the strategic work by themselves, because they're de facto the demon at that point.
Right. All right. I'll buy that. I think it's a reasonable argument, and I do agree with you that the the risk for Vortox of not handling the strategy well is so incredibly high. Shall we each do one more, maybe?
Sure. Oh, I have an interesting thing we can think about. So we have five minions down in C tier. Evil Twin, Harpy, Spy, Mastermind, and Boffin. Wouldn't it be nice to get one more of those four five minions down in D tier so we could have exactly four minions in D tier?
I think that's fine by me. I mean, I know what my argument is going to be for, but let me think about it for a second just to see All right, so let's maybe we just go through like a brief summary on each of them. So Evil Twin is strategically limited because of the pairing, right? So the strategy is going to be in like how you bluff what you're bluffing. Harpy, one of the issues we had was whether or not people sort of how compelling the madness is and whether or not it's that useful, and you know that storytellers maybe don't proc it as often as they should. Spy's just a very weak minion, like just knowing the Grim's not that useful. Maybe the other ability to sort of misregister makes up for it, sort of, but that's kind of taking up the space of Baron and Scarlet Woman, so maybe it's not that useful or that interesting. Mastermind, largely the strategy involved in Mastermind working is either not fun because of the metas that it creates, or it's not fun because it encourages speedrunning the game. And Boffin doesn't really do the strategy itself. It gives the demon a toy to play with, but actually doesn't really create its own strategy. I think that's more or less kind of where we were with each other.
Yeah, more or less.
Oh my god, am I actually going to say that Mastermind is more strategic than Spire Boffin? God help me, I think it is. Yeah. Yeah, I think Harpy could be higher if it were more functional. So I think I'm throwing Harpy out of being a move down to D tier. Right, Harpy is an issue with how it's played, not with the ability.
In my mind, this is Spire Boffin.
It's Spire Boffin, certainly. Yeah, Mastermind. Those while I might not like those two approaches, they are strategic approaches that you could take, and they are relatively strategic in terms of how you think about them. And I think, you know, Twin does have strategy in terms of the bluffing, so, like, that's all fine. Yeah, so Spire Boffin. Oh, boy. I mean, Boffin just doesn't... What's the strategy in Boffin? I guess the question is, like, the strategy in Spy is maybe, like, try to look good, but that's basically what all minions kind of do, or, like, out evil, or, like, try to proc a virgin. But, like, what's the strategy in Boffin at all? like, Boffin, it's just...
You want a stylized so your demon can theoretically keep benefiting from the ability you're granting?
But, I mean, that's like a vanilla minion token. Like, stay alive and do a bad thing to hurt the good team. Like,
yeah.
And Spy doesn't even care about staying alive. I mean, to some extent. But...
Yeah. All right. So Boffin it is.
I think it's Boffin. I can't make an argument for why Spy is more strategic than Boffin, though.
Sometimes, like, thinking about... Sometimes knowing, like... Knowing the Grim gives you a responsibility to use that knowledge wisely.
Sure, let's go with that. Let's move Boffin down to D tier. I'm fine with it.
All right. I'm pretty content with where our list is right now, but do you have anything else? Do you have one more character you want to talk about?
The only other character, and I just genuinely think it's because we did this tier list, did the demon tier list sort of right after it came out, would be Lord of Typhon. I think we thought that there was quite a lot there for Lord of Typhon that you could sort of do, but maybe it didn't create some great play patterns, and without fully rehashing it, I wonder if, like, now having had a couple of months to think about it and to play in and see some Lord of Typhon games, whether we think the strategy is still quite high or whether we think the strategy has come down at all or whether we think it needs to go up.
I think it's more middling than I thought it was initially.
I think it's much more middling than I thought it was as well. And I think the strategy of, like, trying to hide the fact that the line is there is not only quite hard to pull off most of the time, but also involves kind of sacrificing your resources in ways that may not be fun for players, which, again, is, like, not necessarily what we're talking about. But also, like, just kind of trying to create worlds where you're not the Lord of Typhon, or that section of people is not the Lord of Typhon group, is quite... hard, and I don't know that you can strategically think about it in a way that doesn't just result in good sort of getting information on you, and trying to weasel out of it is pretty tricky. So I think I'm kind of suggesting that we move Lord of Typhon maybe down to B tier.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Just because I think, you know, it was very new when we looked at it. All right, well, that seems to be it. Are we gonna make this S tier script?
I mean, it's certainly something that exists.
It's a script.
It's a script. It has 13 townsfolk, 4 demons, 4 outsiders, 4 minions. It needs a sentinel because we took away the baron.
No outsider mod yet.
So it needs a sentinel now, which is fine. Sentinel is a fine script writing tool.
Mm-hmm.
There's some awkward stuff like monk innkeeper, but that's not surprising.
Yeah, there's some awkward stuff like gambler and gossip without any multi-kill potential for the evil team, really?
No, there's a wizard and an elhead that have multi-kill potential.
Right, forgive me. Yeah, everyone will know that the gossip, and the, or everyone will know that the gambler wasn't picked by the Aladikia, of course, but I guess that's fine.
They won't know that the gambler wasn't picked by the wizard, though.
That's right. And the wizard can certainly wish for Al-Hadikia, like, announcements to be made, which is kind of interesting and funny. So maybe. Yeah. Summoner could bring an Al-Hadikia in on day three. That's quite hilarious.
Yeah. The Al-Had can bluff that the summoners brought it in on day three by not making any choices night two.
That's true. You can even poison a demon on this one. So yeah, maybe it's a script. I won't make it, but I think Caffeine has been chasing the tier list a little bit and may have put it together out there somewhere. So feel free to go and play that, whatever it is.
High strategy is what I call this script.
High strategy. Yeah, you'd have to be high to get the strategy.
But also we're gonna have the brain dead script.
Because we now have
4 minions and 4 outsiders. The 4 demons are in C tier.
Do we have 13 townsfolk?
We have 7 townsfolk in D tier. We'll have to pick 6 C tier townsfolk to go on the brain dead script.
Well, we could C tier, but C tier is correct, right? That's 7. Yeah, that's 13 townsfolk, 4 demons.
Yeah, but we need the seven D tier townsfolk on it.
Of course,
it's only going to be 6 of those C tier townsfolk on the brain dead script.
Mazephali's organ grinder, boom dandy Boffin. What a great time. Go have
with
fun
the demons of Shavaloth, Kazali, Leviathan, and Little Monster.
Oh man, those all work together really, really well.
Oh, they do. They will now.
Oh, they will now. The brain dead script. Oh man. Well, this has been fun, Emma. I've enjoyed this. I'm looking forward to having some folks on to beat us up about it. Now that we've finalized this, I'm going to go ahead and screenshot it and put it out there on the Discord in the podcast channel as finalized tier list for everyone to go and beat up. I mean, this is the number one tier list that we've ever made.
It's certainly of all the tier list I've ever seen that try to rank Blood of the Clock Tower characters strategically, it is the only one.
Yeah, and certainly in that it is the best one. So everyone should go out and use this to determine what should go on your strategically minded scripts, so that you can build some scripts that are very strategy.
Yeah, very, very strategy, very script.
All strategy. No script. I mean,
all strategy, and also your brain dead scripts for when you just don't want to think.
Yeah, yeah. Go make a spy script. I mean, go make an organ grinder script. That's a great one. Oh boy. All right, everybody. Well, I think that's it for us. We'll be back with I don't know, some more stuff in the future when we do another
probably
podcast.
Probably weekly, maybe every other week, maybe once a month. Who knows? We're lazy.
We got a lot of stuff going on.
May your scenarios stay grim.
See ya.